Welcome to the Compassionate Capitalist Radio Show with host Karen Rands. A compassionate capitalist is someone who invests their money into entrepreneur endeavors to bring innovation to the market, impact their community, create jobs, and generate wealth for all those involved. Karen and her guests share insights and best practices for entrepreneurs to succeed and scale their business and investors to share in that success without all the risks. And now. Hey, welcome back to the Compassionate Capitalist Show. Okay, for you, those of you that have listened to this show for a while, you know that when I learn something new and I'm surprised that I've learned something new, I am totally transparent about it. And the unique thing about, I think about my perspective on the world is, you know, like as people at my age, lots of different hats. But I've also had the added benefit of spending a decade seeing new business ideas, new solutions, new things with my angel investor group and the companies that we help get capital and grow to be scalable. So I, you know, and all the companies I've looked at that we didn't do anything with, you know, so from business models and business concepts, lots of stuff. It's even to this day, the companies I mentor, I work with, panels I participate in, just everything. I'm always exposed to new deals, just as many as investors are themselves. And then with the benefit of being a host on a podcast like this, and of course we have, you know, folks for the benefit of our executives and entrepreneur and investor audience, we have investors that talk about how they learned about investing, get started. We have VC people, we have service providers and industry leaders talk about best practices to scale companies and specific experiences of entrepreneurs. So I interview a lot of people about a lot of different concepts. And I'm going to tell you right now, what we're talking about one today, and if you're sitting at the edge of your seat saying, what are you talking about, Karen? And you didn't read the title, 83-1Bs. All right. So raise your hand. No, I'm joking, y'all. I can't see y'all. But this is something that I just really was kind of, I just was like shaking my head that I'd never heard those numbers or even that the concept of this can work. So let me tell you a little bit about it. And then I'm going to tell you about my guest who is really the expert in it. And so much so that their website, 83-1B.com. I mean, like how direct and specific can you get than that? And you must have been doing it a minute because you got the actual website of what it is. It's not like 83-1B advisor and such and such number four or whatever, right? That you have to come up with or a dot something else besides com. These guys, they probably did write a book on it, I should say. So anyway, let me tell you about this. So like back when I was in IBM, it's all about risk management, right? We had whole practices that would focus on continuity, redundancy, data silos, and anticipation of a natural disaster, or nowadays, you know, a hack by, you know, somebody that takes all your systems down, you know, what is your contingency plan, all on the data and electrical and all that kind of stuff. And then I've had podcast guests that talked about contingency plans for people in leadership, where we talk about making sure everybody knows what their roles and responsibilities. If you suddenly have an illness or a death of a key executive and the business can go on and continue to thrive. And we talk about key man insurance to protect assets and investors' investment in that. So when those thought leaders, the developer, the designer, the people that are really critical to the success of the company, something happens, the assets of the business can be protected and the investors' investment can be protected. And even long time ago, when I first started the podcast, I did an interview with a risk management firm that looked at this whole, you know, holistic approach to all the different aspects of risk and your supply chain and this and that and these other kind of things. And again, as I said, ladies and gents, never heard of 83-1B. So, and I think it's 83-1B captive, but our guest will explain that here in just a second. So it seems like it's an insurance product for insurance company risk. But as with a lot of things with money, and I talk a lot about this in my book, Inside Secrets to Angel Investing, and how money has kind of like lives and breathes on its own, and it creates new opportunities and new things for it to grow and multiply. Well, what we have is a savvy way that these business providers, service providers, and in this case, with my guest today, Ed Bryan at 83-1B, they have figured out how to take this tool that and use it to protect the assets on the operations of commercial businesses as well. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So tune in and listen, because you're learning something new. I can tell you, I would bet. And if you have, just out of curiosity, if you had heard of 83-1B and you're not in the insurance industry, I want you to comment on wherever you're listening to that say, thanks for telling everybody else in the world about 83-1B, Karen. So anyway, let me tell you about Ed. Ed has more than 20 years of sales and operations management experience with consistent history of leading high-performance sales teams and operational excellence. And as the director of business development over at 83-1B, right? He leads the SRA team in partnering with clients and valued advisors to provide next-level strategies to business owners, and has been featured as a guest speaker on numerous well-known national conventions, industry events in insurance, finance, and long-term planning, and now as a featured guest on the Compassionate Capitalist Show. Thank you so much, Ed, for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me on, Karen. I really look forward to it. I appreciate it.
So let's start with a little history of the company before, and then we can talk, get into the specifics of 83-1B. But so, has the company, the founders, had they always been doing this? And so it's really like the .com was, 20 years ago, or did you pivot and when you realized there was an opportunity to do this for commercial businesses and come up to really promoting this and helping folks? Because I'm saying, we saw all kinds of unexpected risks that came out with our black swan of the pandemic recently, and I'm sure we'll end up touching on that. But talk about a little bit about how the company came to be and its richness within the industry.
For sure. That's a really interesting question, because the truth of the matter is that our company was really born out of 08 and 09, right? The Great Recession, right?
Okay.
The founders of the company were in traditional commercial insurance and in financial planning, right? And what had happened I can see you shaking your head. What happened is they worked with business owners. And we all know what happened to a lot of business owners, unfortunately, in 08 and 09, right? When the banks stopped lending and started calling notes, they saw a lot of really good business owner clients, entrepreneurs, people that were risk takers, right? They went out of business, right? Because what they were doing is they were leveraging, right? At the end of the year, they'd sit down with their CPA and the CPA would say, you owe X in taxes. Well, what can I go buy? Can I go buy another piece of equipment? Can I go buy another piece of ground? And they would leverage that, right? They would finance that. They're risk takers, right? And we love them. We love business owners, and they're really the backbone of the U.S. economy. But when things stopped, when the music stopped, all of a sudden they found themselves in some really bad situations. Now, what had happened is the founders of our company were friends with and knew of some people that had these 831B plans, right? Or these captives, as they're also known, in place before 08-09. And what happened is they saw these business owners showing up at the auctions, buying equipment for pennies on the dollar, buying land and real estate for pennies on the dollar, because they had accrued these rainy day funds and were sitting on cash. And at that point, when the banks weren't lending, if you had cash, there were amazing deals in business. As you know, across the country, and I'd argue across the globe, there were almost once in a lifetime opportunities. And so because of that, they said, hey, we need to learn more about this. We need to understand this. They were aware of it, but hadn't really done a lot of due diligence. So they started to dive into this and understand that there is a way to set aside funds in a tax advantaged manner to offset risks that your traditional insurance can't cover, right? Or won't cover. And so because of that, that's really where we were born out of. And then you touched on it, the Black Swan event, in 2020 with COVID. I mean, I think we're going to be talking about it for a long time, right?
Well, yeah, because we're still having business ripple effects and implications of it now because of the pent-up demand, the supply chain issue.
Supply chain, yeah, absolutely.
And then now inflation triggered by, this pent-up demand and, it's, yeah.
Exactly. And so because of that, we've seen an increased spike in the last 3 years of interest in this because, as you know, their traditional insurance didn't cover everything for business owners. They couldn't, right? Traditional insurance companies are for-profit entities. They're going to charge as much as they can in premium, and they're going to cover as little as they can. The argument that we always make is if you see your insurance policy getting thicker and thicker, it's not because they're adding more coverages, they're adding more exclusions. Right. So for the business owner, they have risks that are out there that are unfunded right now. They're uncovered. They're essentially covering them with after-tax cash, current cash flow. And so what we're saying is there's a more efficient way to do it. And so that's really where our company was born out of. And we've really seen exponential growth in the last 3 years. And it's one of those things, out of necessity, business owners are becoming more and more aware of these alternative risk financing options.
I see that. So let's get into the nuts and bolts. And just for those that, so exactly what is an 83-1B? Sure. And how can it protect your business? That's the main question. And then we'll get into all the other little variations after that of
for sure
how people understand it.
So yeah, let's talk a little bit initially about something that probably everyone on this podcast is familiar with, the 401k. Everyone knows, I would argue, most everyone knows, especially if you're a business owner, you're an entrepreneur, you're familiar with the 401k. Well, the 401k is simply a piece of the tax code. It was put into place in the late 1970s, right? And that was there was a way for businesses to set aside tax advantage dollars for retirement for themselves and for their employees. So there's a tax incentive. And okay. So now, right, regular business owners now, and it's become a regular business practice, right? Sure. In the last 40 years, we all know what it is. If you even have one person in your office, you can have a 401k. So, and we would argue as well that business owners wouldn't participate in a 401k if there wasn't a tax incentive attached to it. Mm-hmm. So 831B is simply a piece of the tax code as well. Now, it was put into place in the mid 80s. So a little bit of background here so that you can kind of understand why it came into existence and where we're at today, right, with this piece of the tax code. So in the early to mid 1980s in the traditional commercial insurance market, things were not that dissimilar to what they are today. What we were seeing is traditional insurance carriers were increasing their deductibles and premiums. And what was happening is you were seeing a liability crisis. Businesses were having a really hard time finding the insurance that they needed. And if a business had a claim, there was a very high risk that they would be non-renewed the next policy year. And so what happened, Congress said, okay, there's got to be a better way for small to mid-sized businesses to set aside or insure the types of risks that they have in order for them to run their business. And that's where they came up with the piece of the tax code called 831B that allowed a small to mid-sized business to essentially set up and self-insure for risks that they couldn't get coverage for on the open market. And so that's what it is. It came into existence in the mid-80s. It really didn't gain popularity until the later 90s, early 2000s. Now, the reason why it's not as well known is because big business, like the 401k, big business used the 401k first. Big business, enterprise level businesses started to use the 831B code as well. And so there were some barriers to entry for small to mid-sized businesses. It became very expensive. And not unlike the 401k, when 401k first came out, it was expensive to do. Right now, the fees and the costs have come down. So 831B is following a similar trajectory or path. And it's essentially what 831B allows you to do is set aside tax advantage dollars for future risk or future liabilities, right? And that's it in a nutshell. And what we're talking about, go ahead, Karen.
Well, I was going to say, I just wanted to catch that term, tax advantage dollars, because, you know, that's like, oh, well, I know those words. Does that mean it's pre-tax income?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So when you pay premiums into an 831B, they're an expense to your operating company, to your business, right? So if you own a marketing firm or a cybersecurity firm or a construction company, when you pay premiums into this 831B, they lower the taxable income of your operating company. And that 831B does not pick those premiums up as taxable income. So they aren't taxed when they go into the 831B. So if you think about traditional insurance companies are some of the strongest financial institutions in the world. And specifically here in the United States, it's because of how they are or are not taxed, right? And so this is a way for small to mid-sized business to enjoy some of the same benefits that the big businesses out there, the enterprise level businesses, the Walmarts, the Verizons, the Nikes of the world are using, and be able to take a piece of that and try to take a strategy that's traditionally been big business only and say, we're going to apply it to our business as well.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a good risk mitigation strategy. Let's talk about, how do you plan for it? I guess that's kind of your job. And you're not just selling an insurance policy to a company. There's a little you know, I guess caveats to this.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. So everyone, you know, we go back and you'll hear this a lot from us, but you go back to the 401k. If you offer a 401k plan, you have a 401k administrator, right? They're the ones that make sure that you follow the participation guidelines, the ERISA guidelines, that you're staying in compliance within the tax code. So we're an 831B administrator. We do the same thing with 831B, right? We offer that turnkey service so that a small to mid-sized business can do this and they don't need an army of CPAs and an army of attorneys to figure out how to do it, right? We do that for them. We keep them compliant, make sure they're following the guidelines. We help them identify the risks or the gaps in their traditional insurance coverages and help them set up the policies that will best address those. And so to be clear, this is a separate entity, right? They're C-Corps, they're C-Corporations, and we set those up for our clients and we help them manage those. We do the tax returns. We help them figure out the coverages that they need to put into those things. Any regulatory or compliance issues, we handle those for the client. Just no different than a 401k administrator.
Okay. So, all right. So then, I mean, given that's a separate company, at what stage should somebody, you know, there's also a ceiling on how much it can be put into it, right? So does it parallel like a company that's making $1 million is still kind of too small, or it depends on the industry and the space that they're in? It's really for a company making $20 million, you know, to be able to offset their stuff. Where does it fit, or is it kind of a different size for a different size? You know, one size doesn't fit all. So, you know, talk about how it's modified or adjusted according to the size, and at what stage should the investors and the entrepreneurs listening think, okay, now this is when we should really start to evaluate if it's a good time for us?
Great question. There's a lot there. Let's talk about it. I wish I could give you a cut and dried answer. I'm going to give you somewhat of a little bit of a messy answer. Just because, to your point, one size does not fit all.
Okay.
So a couple things about the tax code. So in 1986, when it was put into place, a business could set aside up to $1.2 million into an 831B every year. In 2015, with the PATH Act, they changed that to 2.2, and then they attached an inflation rider on that. And given the current state of inflation that we're in, we've seen that number creep up to about $2.4 million on an annual basis that you can set aside into an 831B. Now, we have some internal control mechanisms, right, as well. So what I would tell you is we look at gross revenue and we look at a percentage of gross revenue and we'll say, okay, this is the most you could set aside, because that's our job to keep our clients compliant within the tax code.
Okay.
But let's talk about what kind of businesses should look at it, what phase of business they might want to consider an 831B. And that's the messy part of this answer. One size truly does not fit all. We have clients that say grossing $1 million, and then we have clients that gross $200 or $300 million and everywhere in between. You can apply an 831B to any industry. Here's the key, right? And this is the litmus test, really, is if a business is, or a business owner is really past their spending phase, right? They've got a successful entity. They're sitting there thinking, okay, what's next? Or they lay in bed at night and think about all the things that worry them, right? That you know, that they know that their traditional insurance isn't covering, either because they've had something happen already, or they've heard of someone that had something happen to where their traditional insurance carrier denied a claim or wouldn't even let them file a claim. Or maybe they know somebody that barely made it through COVID with their business, right? So someone who is a sophisticated business owner, someone who is a thinker that understands that there are unmitigated risks that they have out there. And then to your point, they have to have the excess cash flow to set aside into this thing. So that's a qualifier. But like I said, it's one of those things where everybody's situation is a little different. The beautiful part of an 831B is you can come to us and we can sit down and look at your individual situation and we'll make recommendations. And we tell everybody every year, you know, we'll look at it, but timing's key, you know, and that's the big thing. Timing is so important with an 831B, because for a business owner, and you know this, if it's not going to be a win for them, we'll be the first ones to raise our hands and say, maybe we need to wait, or let's wait until things are in a little different situation. Because when you pull the trigger on this and when you really leverage this, it really needs to be a win for the client.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just clear, you know, I get, because it's new, I had lots of little questions. I didn't prepare a whole thing because I just really wanted to explore this. So different than like, okay, I'm cash flow positive. I've got, you know, excess cash and, you know, I got it in my bank, right? And so in this particular case, I can look at my cash situation and say, I'm not, but I just want to clarify, I'm not buying like in a key man insurance thing where I'm going to buy $10 million worth of insurance and I'm going to pay, you know, $500,000 a year for that, for these people. This is my money, very similar to the people listening might recognize HSAs, health savings accounts, you know, whether they're not, they may, you know, 401ks are all kind of over there. There's different kind of things, but they may be doing that because just of the way they've elected to do their benefits, that's their money. It's pre-tax money that they get to do. So in effect, they are, what they're putting into this is the money that they will be able to draw upon. It's not like, you know, there's not another leverage to it that exceeds the amount they have set into an 83-1B.
Well, that's a great question. And the answer is actually there is some leveraging there. And let's talk about that. I'm glad you brought that up. This is the fun part. This is kind of the nitty gritty, right? So to your point, clients do set their money aside into this, but there is some leveraging. There's a 2-to-1. So for every dollar that comes into the program, you get $2 in coverage, right?
Really?
So, yes. Yeah. That's the fun part. There's an element of insurance here. And the way we achieve that is by doing some risk sharing. So think about traditional insurance, right? If you have State Farm for your auto insurance and your listeners all have it and I have it, and say I get in an auto accident, and I file a claim with State Farm, and State Farm goes through and they go through the adjusting process and find that the claim's valid and they owe me $10,000. Well, what they're going to do, and a lot of people don't know this, they're going to go and pull a little bit of premium for everybody that has a policy in that given year, gather it up and pay me my claim. So we're all risk sharing right now in traditional insurance. We just may not be aware of it. So what we do is we silo or we pool our clients in risk co-ops. It's no different than how traditional insurance got started. State Farm and Farmers, you create these risk co-ops where you have similar risks and you share in each other's risk. So to your point, the bulk of the funds are each individual client's, but at a certain point, there is some third party pro rata sharing of risk. And we utilize the law of large numbers to mitigate that risk, but that does allow us to offer a 2-to-1 ratio. So for example, let's just talk real quick about a scenario, and hopefully this will help people wrap their minds around it. Let's say that you put $50,000 into a cybersecurity policy with us. That would mean that you would have $100,000 in coverage. And let's say that you suffered some kind of a cyber incident and it was adjudicated and adjusted and found to be $100,000 loss. Well, the first $50,000 that you set aside is going to go towards that claim. We share risk with our clients, and then everyone else that has a cyber policy with us in a given year is going to owe a pro rata share of that claim. So, and we would gather that up as the admin and then pay that to the insured. So there is definitely an element of risk sharing and insurance. Does that hopefully help you wrap your head around it?
A little bit. Let me, So if two things on that.
Yeah.
So that example of a $50,000 claim, they're taking half out of their own money and then half out of the shared pool money of other people's premiums.
Essentially, yeah. We as the admin also own a share of every claim. We have to pay a percentage of every claim as well. So it's not quite half, but yes, you're on the right path. So there
and
is
it's
different
not like
layers.
They have to use all the money they've put into it first and then they get whatever extra.
No,
dollar for dollar on that.
Right. Okay. And so here's the thing as well to know that most of our clients don't end up with just one policy. Right. So let's say that you had $100,000 in premiums that you were going to set aside into an 831B. You're going to end up most of the time somewhere between 4 and maybe 5 or 6 different coverages. So what we do there is it's twofold, right? So we give you more of a broad layer of the risk management or that fill in the gaps in those different policies that you have or exposures where you don't have coverage. And at the same time, we water down everyone's pro rata share of those co-ops, right? So based on a pro rata share, you start to own fractions of percentage points, no different than traditional insurance. It's exactly how traditional insurance pools their reserves every year or their at-risk premiums and pays claims, right? And so they water down that number so that, for example, in that scenario I gave you of a $100,000 claim, someone's pro rata share in that co-op might only be $7. It might be $30. So you can see there is risk sharing, and you have to have risk sharing to call yourself an insurance company. And that's part of the litmus test that the IRS puts out there to participate in this tax code. And full disclosure, if anyone ever gets in trouble with the IRS with 831B tax code, it's because they're not sharing risk. Because here's the truth of the matter, Karen. You don't want to share risk with me. I don't want to share risk with you. But in order to call it insurance, you have to have unaffiliated third-party risk. So hopefully not too far down a rabbit hole, but it's an important part. And we're very proud about that piece of our program.
But now so when you mentioned that all the other shareholders in that pool will take a little bit of their premium, that's just the way it works. They're not like getting an email going, click this to approve the release of these funds or anything, right?
So we handle that. Yeah, that's the beautiful part of it. So as the admin, you know, I mentioned earlier, turnkey solution, that's what we do. So that way the business owner doesn't have to sit there and figure out, okay, what do I owe? Or, you know, what's going on here? We handle all of that to where we make it turnkey, simple, and effortless for the business owner to own one of these things.
Okay. And then, so there, now you mentioned policies. So like you gave the example of the company earlier that was able to buy up these equipment and different things during that time. Does it, you know, is it restricted to what you choose as your policy? It's cybersecurity. So you have to use that on cybersecurity, or it's business interruptions. And then you could go buy more equipment, even though you didn't lose your equipment, but you're buying more equipment with it. Explain how, where's the flexibility for the business owner on how.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's think about it in the sense of traditional insurance, right? Traditional insurance policies are usually a year long. Right. So our policies are generally January 1 to December 31. And what we do is we'll sit down with the client, the business owner, and look at the risks that they have. And we have a lot of risk profiles. We've been doing this for a long time. And we'll kind of do some underwriting and benchmark some of those risks. And what will happen is the business owner can give us their feedback and we'll weight the policies that they're more concerned with. And then maybe there are others that don't apply to them in their industry. So to your point, we offer about 15 to 16 different coverages. All of them, the easiest way to think about it is all of them are there to protect the cash flow of the business. Because as you know, cash flow is the blood of the lifeblood of the business. If there's not cash flow, the argument can be made that the business doesn't exist. There's no 401k, there's no payroll, there's no debt servicing. It doesn't exist, right? So those are the types of things that we help them cover. And they're all tied to, in some way, shape, or form, business interruption. We have political risk policies. We have supply chain policies. We have third-party business interruption policies, accounts receivable, transactional risk if you're going to buy and sell a business. So you can kind of see these are things, and they might sound similar to policies or coverages you can get on the open market. The important caveat or thing of note here is to know that our policies are written broadly and they're designed to cover you when a traditional policy might not. Let me give you a quick example so that it can help people understand. So when COVID happened, and the governments in the cities and municipalities started to shut down business and say, hey, you're non-essential, right? I mean, it seems like a lifetime ago, but it was only, a couple of years ago. A lot of business owners went to their traditional business interruption policies and called those insurers and said, hey, I want to file a claim. And what happened? Well, those insurance companies said, well, have you had a fire or a flood? Maybe you've had an earthquake, right? You see where I'm going with this, right? Oh, wait, you haven't had the insurance term as a triggering event, right? You didn't have something physical, some kind of damage that prevented your business or your clients or your people from doing business with you, your patients, et cetera. Well, you can't even file a claim. Well, we have a contingent or a third-party business interruption policy that states for any reason, if your customers can't get to you and do business, you can file a claim. We saw that play out over and over. And to be honest with you, there are still court cases that are going to take forever to resolve with traditional insurance carriers on these business interruption policies. But you can kind of see ours are designed to pick up or fill in those gaps where traditional insurance falls short. So to your point, while those premiums or those policies are in place for the year, those funds can be managed. The business owner can have their financial advisor manage the money. We have partners that we work with, but they've got to be fairly liquid because those are truthfully insurance premiums at risk of claims, just like ordinary insurance. So when I say manage, they can be put to work in the market. So stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, fairly liquid, right? At the end of the year, minus any claims, once those policies expire, no different than a traditional insurance company, the funds become underwriting profit or surplus reserves to your 831B.
Okay.
Yep. So you see where we're going. Yeah. At the end of that year, those funds now become available for loans or dividends, or you can leave them there and allow them to grow. So you can see So the scenario I gave you about someone buying equipment, they were taking surplus reserves, so funds that were no longer at risk of claims, loaning those back to themselves and then going to buy that equipment rather than going to the bank when the bank wasn't lending, right? When no banks were lending, they loaned themselves the money and went out and bought that equipment. And so, yeah, you get a lot of flexibility. So you start to stack year after year. You renew the policy, you pay new premiums. It's almost like a hamster wheel, right? It comes in, the premiums minus any claims expire, they become underwriting profit, and you can loan against those, you can dividend against those. And here's the beautiful thing, Karen, the business owner is in charge. Because right now, as a business owner, you make money in a year, the IRS says, we're going to tax that dollar, right? And yeah. You can't just take that dollar out of your left hand and put it in your right and say, I'm not going to pay taxes on this, I'm insuring myself. Well, there is a way to do that, and it's called 831B, right? So we take money off the front end, we put it into the 831B, you have a layer of coverage that you didn't have before, and at the end of the year, those funds expire, and those policies expire, funds are available for loans, dividends, long-term planning strategies, and that's where a business owner can really start to leverage an 831B.
Okay, so last question, as we start to wrap this up, maybe, I think it's the last question, is... So when you say that they can, then they roll over and now they're available. Do they have to be a loan to come back, or are there restrictions? Like they must be a dividend to shareholders, or they must be this way, or they can just accumulate, or how they can throw a giant party in New Year's Eve. You know what?
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Yeah. So let's talk about it. So you can leave the funds there and allow them to continue to grow. Right. There's nothing that says that you have to pull the funds out. Once again, this is your 831B as a business owner. You're in charge. The second piece is, yes, you can loan yourself the bulk of your surplus reserves every year. You would contact us as an administrator. Right. It comes back to that administrator role. And we have note terms, say, from 60-day bridge loans all the way to 15 to 20 year mortgages. We see clients use them they'll take a loan to buy out a competitor or bulk up their inventory, or maybe they make payroll between jobs, or maybe they want to buy some real estate. There's so many things you can do with that. And rather than going to the bank or going to a vendor and getting a line of credit, you in essence are loaning yourself those funds.
So you have to be a performing note. You do have to treat it like a performing note.
Absolutely.
And then you do have to pay back into
absolutely
that surplus.
Absolutely. Okay. Yep. So that's that piece there. And then the other piece is, so that's really that third option is you can dividend those funds out. Any surplus reserves, and they come out as a qualified dividend to the shareholder, right? Instead of being taxed as ordinary income, they're going to be taxed as essentially long-term capital gains or qualified dividend tax rates. More often than not, our business owner clients will have a nice tax arbitrage or a win there rather than paying ordinary income. So, but here's the beauty, Karen, you don't have to do any one of those three things every year. You can tell us, you get to dictate as a business owner, how and when you access those funds. And that's the beauty of it, right? Is that you're in control. And the more options a business owner has, and you know this, the better decisions they can make.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, I just had a little aha moment. I remember a guy promoting a concept of for investors to mitigate their risk in a company, because they could roll some of that money that they were putting into an insurance policy that if something were to happen, they could get their money back out of that. And he never called it an 831B. I always thought it was like a Lloyd's of London kind of strange policy, but it very well could have been something like this. So I thank you so much for coming on here and sharing all these great insights, Ed. Everybody, please go to 831B.com. Is there any kind of call to action that you want to tell people they can get a document or something there?
Yeah. So I guess here's what I would say. If you're interested, go to 831B.com and click on the contact us link. We'll get you a due diligence packet. We'll, you know, if you're interested, if you have individualized questions, reach out to me. My email is simple. It's just ed@831b.com. More than happy to help. And here's the thing, Karen, we're educators about this tax code, because the honest truth of the matter is we believe that small to mid-sized business, they're the backbone of the US economy. They take more risks. And you know, this entrepreneurs of this world in this country, they take so many risks. Here's a way that when things are going well, to take some funds off the top, set it aside. And then if that rainy day happens, you can once again make the decision, you know, have the funds to go fight that fight. Or maybe, you know, if that never happens, we hope that doesn't happen. And you could ride off into the sunset and you've got a lot of options down the road. So yeah, love to talk to anybody about it. And I appreciate it. It's been delightful.
Thank you so much, Ed. Appreciate it. And folks listening, please share this with business owners, you know, share this with investors, people that you go, wow, this would be really helpful for your business. Your friend is worried staying up. If you're listening to this and your spouse or partner has a business and they stay up late at night worried about this kind of stuff, make sure they listen to this podcast. All right. You know, give them a good night's sleep tonight. And next thing is, I want to make sure y'all go to KarenRands.co or CougarRand.com and, you know, get access to the book, learn how to give your money an upgrade by investing in entrepreneurs as a compassionate capitalist, and get advantage of some of the programs that we're offering right now for helping entrepreneurs do and investors do due diligence in the companies that they're looking at. And with that, I would say onwards and upwards. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, The Compassionate Capitalist Show, brought to you by Cougaran Capital Holdings with Karen Rands as host. You are encouraged to visit the website cougaran.com to learn more about how Karen and her team help investors and angel groups make money by avoiding investing in deals that suck, and how the Cougaran Capital companies and partners help entrepreneurs break through their barriers to capital and live their dream by building companies that can scale and create generational wealth for their founders and investors. If your business could benefit from exposure to our audience of business executives, entrepreneurs, and investors, we are seeking financial partners and sponsors for the Compassionate Capitalist Show to help us take this podcast beyond our 150,000 listeners and amplify the message of the Compassionate Capitalist movement by making this a top 50 business podcast. The Compassionate Capitalist Show is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, and Google Podcasts. Contact us at KarenRands.co to learn more. And as a listener, you can do your part of the Compassionate Capitalist Movement by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts and sharing this show with your friends and colleagues. Be sure to pick up your copy of Karen's bestseller that launched the Compassionate Capitalist Movement, Inside Secrets to Angel Investing, a step-by-step strategies to leverage private equity investment for passive wealth creation. Thank you for listening.